This is Fresh Air. Our book critic Maureen Corrigan has a review of Charles Bach's new novel. His 2008 debut novel, Beautiful Children, delved into the depravities of Las Vegas. It became a New York Times bestseller and notable book of the year. His new novel, Alice and Oliver, explores a subject painfully closer to home.
There was no difference between men in intelligence or race so profound as the difference between the sick and the well. That fairly familiar line, a mere fleeting perception from The Great Gatsby, is the bedrock wisdom of Charles Bach's beautiful and harrowing new novel, Alice and Oliver. Alice is a new mother in her 20s who one day, out of the blue, coughs up bloody phlegm, collapses, and is diagnosed with leukemia. Oliver is her husband. He's a trooper who hangs on to his job and tends their baby daughter, shaves his head in solidarity when Alice goes through chemo, and braves the hellish maze of health insurance to try to secure the care she needs for survival. But no matter how loving and connected the two of them are, once cancer enters their lives, Alice is the sick one and Oliver isn't. Bach could have chosen to write this story as an autobiography. As he tells readers in the acknowledgments here, Alice and Oliver is based on a real-life nightmare that began in 2009 when his wife, then a young mother, was diagnosed with leukemia. She died 2.5 years later. The novel's source undoubtedly imbues it with authority, but its literary power derives from Bach's elastic language, stretching from his detailed inventories of extreme medical procedures to the lyric melancholy of his descriptions of mood and place. The novel opens in 1993. Alice, a fashion designer, and Oliver, a software startup entrepreneur, have moved at his insistence to an industrial space in the as-yet-ungentrified meatpacking district in New York. We're told that the neighborhood's every daylight hour was dominated by dock thugs and frozen slabs. After dark, rotted zombie addicts held court with leather collar sex club slaves and transvestite streetwalkers. Oliver, though, is handy with screwdrivers and power sanders. He transforms the desolate living space into a soaring, ultra-modern loft. But here's the kicker. After Alice is diagnosed, and when she was at her worst, we're privy to this confession. When she needed to blame Oliver for something, for anything, she returned to the promise she couldn't forget, high on his list of guarantees. They'd be insulated. The smells from the warehouses, frozen beef and lingering death wouldn't reach them, but they did. Bach's elegance as a writer belies his resolute focus on the elemental meatiness of the human body, its many vulnerabilities and humiliations. The novel follows Alice through her course of treatment for leukemia. Those readers fortunate enough to be unfamiliar with medical terms like induction, consolidation, and transplant are thrust into their baroque and brutal realities as Alice sheds hair and skin and even the energy to hold a thought. And always, on the other side of the sick and well dividing line, stands Oliver, guilty and oftentimes just itching to escape hospital world. Early on in their ordeal, we're told that when relief arrives in the form of Alice's mother, the clock started eating into Oliver's holy and awaited break time. He'd hightail it out, grabbing a chicken sandwich from a sports bar or some sad Chinese lunch from a buffet table of greased food rotting beneath heat lamps. Overprocessed, grease-fire-charred garbage, his official coping mechanism. He made sure to binge away from the hospital. He wouldn't let her see anything that might cause her faith in him to waver. But as the months of torment drag on, Oliver's binges grow more varied and reckless. Bach is unflinching here in his depiction of failures of the body and the spirit. Alice and Oliver is both haunting and raw, a rare novel about, in this case, cancer, that doesn't try to find meaning in serious illness, but rather gives its random malevolence its full due.
Maureen Corrigan teaches literature at Georgetown University. She reviewed Alice and Oliver by Charles Bach. Tomorrow on Fresh Air, after the city of Charlotte passed an ordinance banning discrimination against LGBT people, the North Carolina state legislature called a special session and passed a bill overruling Charlotte's new law. We'll talk about how preemption by state legislatures is overruling many local laws, from fracking bans to paid sick leave. Our guest will be Lisa Graves of the Center for Media and Democracy. I hope you'll join us. Before we end today's show, we want to thank our administrative assistant, Dorothy Farabee, who has retired. Part of her job was to respond to calls and emails from listeners, so it's possible you communicated with her. She's been with us since 1990, so saying goodbye isn't easy. We remember when she used to bring her little son to work. We watched him grow up. Now both of Dorothy's children have children of their own, and they all feel like part of the Fresh Air family. Dorothy has a big heart and a generous spirit and a fondness for other people's idiosyncrasies. She also has an admirable distrust of everything phony or pretentious. Dorothy and our director, Roberta Shurrock, shared a cubicle for 26 years. Roberta will especially miss her and the way Dorothy would let us know about ridiculous things on TV and the internet. Dorothy and Roberta had a favorite movie clip, which they played over and over, and it always made them laugh. Us too. Roberta still has that clip on reel-to-reel tape, left over from our 1987 interview with Robert Townsend after he directed the film Hollywood Shuffle, a comedy about the black stereotypes perpetuated by Hollywood. I will now play for you that 30-year-old piece of tape. This is an audition scene from Hollywood Shuffle.
Anyway, after getting my degree from the Royal Academy of Dramatic Art, I decided to come to Hollywood and do some movies.
Good. Why don't you start with the speech? That's very interesting.
Sure. Okay. Let me see. I ain't afraid of you. What is happening with your cool vines?
Thank you.
You're the worst actor I've ever seen in my life. I have to be frank with you.
I could do it in iambic.
You be messing with the wrong dude, bro.
Thank you.
I got
nice.
It.
Thank you.
Nice.
Did you like it?
Very much.
I ain't be got no weapon.
That never gets old. It wasn't part of Dorothy's job description to generate story ideas, but over the years, she generated some great ones. She didn't write on-air copy, but she wrote the 2003 book, How to Create Your Own African-American Library. Dorothy wasn't an on-air person, but there was the time we convinced her to sing on the air. It was after an interview with the author of a book about bananas. Let me play that back for you. Dan Capel is the author of the new book, Banana, The Fate of the Fruit That Changed the World. Well, I have to say, I liked his rendition of the Chiquita Banana song. And after the interview was over, Dorothy Farabee, who's our administrative assistant, stopped in the studio and she told me she remembered a different version of the song. So I asked Dorothy if she would sing it for you. So Dorothy, you want to do it?
I'm Chiquita Banana and I'm here to say bananas give you energy for work and play and the calorie count. I'm happy to say in the medium bananas only 88.
All right. I guess this is when their diet conscious campaign. Thank you for doing that.
You're welcome.
So Dorothy's probably going to hate us for playing that. I hope that won't stop her from coming back and visiting. And I hope she comes back soon. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Our interviews and reviews are produced and edited by Amy Sallet, Phyllis Myers, Anne-Marie Baldonado, Sam Brigger, Lauren Krenzel, John Sheehan, Heidi Simon, Teresa Madden, and Thea Chaloner. I'm Terry Gross.